Zechariah chapter 14. Behold, the day of the Lord cometh, and thy spoil shall be divided in the midst of thee, for I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle. And the city shall be taken, and the houses rifled, and the women ravished, and half of them shall go forth into captivity, and the residue of the people shall not be cut off from the city. Zechariah 14, verses 1 and 2. The first verses of our final chapter are simply a continuation of the final verses of the preceding 13th chapter. They amplify and expand the subject of the judgment which is yet to fall upon Jerusalem and the Jews in the 7 years of prophesied wonders. It is the same time again reverted to which Zechariah 12 opened. The mourning time of Israel and their cleansing appear as a parenthesis herein, for now we hear the judgment peals. The judgment is allowed of God to fall upon Jerusalem in the final great siege by means of the marshaled Gentile armies of the Confederated Nations, their subsequent decisive destruction coming upon them as a whirlwind is so graphically related by Zechariah as though he were an eyewitness. Some may be surprised that there is a repetition of so many of these events, but that is the way of the scriptures. The prophets often announce some important coming event, then later give us more details of it, which is the case here. Any attempt to make all these statements of Zechariah follow in chronological order would reduce the prophecies to a mass of confusion. The same manner is found in Revelation. There is first a statement of the happenings of the 7 years of Daniel 9:27 in Revelation 6, and then the events are detailed in the remaining chapters. In the case of the fulfillment of these prophecies, there must be the restoration of the Jews to Palestine in unbelief, which state of affairs has been going on for the past 10 years. They must be there before the second advent of Christ, for prophecy demands it. There will exist the same state of affairs as at the first advent of Christ, when their clock nationally stopped, not to be wound up again until the times of the Gentiles shall be fulfilled. This period is at hand. We can see the stately steppings of the Sovereign of the Seasons in his wonderful moving at the present moment. Jews, Gentiles, and the Church of God are all being sifted and located according to his prearranged plan and purpose, taking the position on Jehovah's great stage for the final wind-up of this age. Hence we say there must be a nucleus of the Jews in the land of promise when the Lord begins to fulfill his gracious promises to them. They will be only a small minority compared to the whole nation that will come into blessing, for prior to this will be the great tribulation during which so many will perish. A Jewish state will no doubt soon be in order. It will arise under the protection of the European League of Nations, which may even now be seen coming into view. Conditions among these nations are forcing this issue. The Jewish Commonwealth will be according to the Zionist program as the openly recognized and legally assured home of the Jew. The Balfour Declaration recognized the Jews as once more a nation and promised to facilitate their re-establishment in Palestine after Jerusalem had been captured by the British Army under General Allenby. But so far this glorious hope has not materialized. They are yet waiting that day for which every Orthodox Jewish heart yearns, and it will come as sure as the sunrise. Habakkuk urged them to wait for the fulfillment of the promise, though the vision tarry, because it will come, Habakkuk 2:3. Paul connects this above vision as that of the coming of Christ. He declares that the restoration and blessing of Israel is dependent upon their attitude to their Messiah. For yet a little while, and he that shall come and will not tarry, Hebrews 10:37. But to return to Zechariah 14, after a short interval of peace and prosperity as a nation, there will come for the Jew the dreadful night of anguish, the darkest hour of Israel's sad history. It is prophesied in this gathering of the nations and the attendant siege of Jerusalem. It will be the retributive judgment of Jehovah upon them, allowed because of the covenant into which they will enter with the counterfeit Christ. to whom they will swear allegiance, thus culminating their national apostasy and fulfilling the word of Christ. If another shall come in his name, him ye will receive. John 5, verse 43. Isaiah calls it a covenant of death and an agreement with hell. He also declares that the hail, or judgment, shall sweep away the refuge of lies, and the waters shall overflow the hiding place. Isaiah 28, verses 17 and 18. Jeremiah exclaims, "Alas, for the day is great, so that there is none like it, even the time of Jacob's trouble." Jeremiah 30, verse 7. The dreadfulness of those stirring days we have commented upon in Zechariah 12. The armies of the confederated nations, the flower of their strength, march in triumph through the land, easily treading down all opposition, and in overwhelming, irresistible force and fury, attack Jerusalem, which is speedily at their mercy. The city is taken and the spoil divided in the midst of her in calm, leisurely fashion without any fear of molestation. Then the cruel scenes which accompany war and the sacking of the besieged city will be in evidence to the uttermost. Half the population is dragged forth to go into captivity, and the small and wretched remnant left is without hope. The enemy probably intends them for a later destruction, but here it can be truly said, "Man proposes, but God disposes," and in this case, interposes. The day which begins with calamities for Israel is not going to end in triumph for their foes. For this is the day of the Lord, a day set apart for him to display his mighty power and show himself the majestic man of destiny, the man who shall make his enemies bite the dust. It is the hour of Christ's triumph, the hour for which he has been waiting 1900 years, the day when he shall go forth for the salvation of his people, as it is written, "Then shall the Lord go forth and fight against those nations as when he fought in the day of battle." Zechariah 14, verse 3. Many instances are recorded in Scripture when Jehovah fought for Israel. For instance, note Joshua 10, 14, where we read words almost identical with these of Zechariah's prophecy, "And there was no day like that before it or after it, for Jehovah fought for Israel." That was the day when the organized armies of the nations of Canaan were defeated by Joshua and his unmilitary hosts, the unmilitary hosts being typical of the remnant of the Jews in the last great conflict. The Lord fought for Joshua and Israel at that time, which was the cause of the victory, and so will it be again. "If God be for us, who can be against us?" Paul inquires, Romans 8:31. And then proceeds to answer his own question by the following statements in that chapter of unfathomed depths of grace and truth.